You are listening to the Just Chill Parenting Podcast. I am your host, Rosie Davidson, an infant sleep consultant, author, and mum of three. This is a show all about honest chat where I talk about my favourite topic, sleep, of course, but I will also be covering your burning parenting questions and speak to some very special guests along the way. So buckle up and enjoy! And welcome to the Just Chill Parenting Podcast. This episode, I'm joined by a special guest and all-round wonderful person, Claire Bourne. Claire is a specialist pelvic health physiotherapist and author who breaks barriers around taboo topics. With extensive experience in the NHS, Claire now runs her own private practice. As a mother of two, Claire also understands the importance of perinatal care firsthand. She wrote a brilliant book, Strong Foundations, Why Pelvic Health Matters, and founded All About Mum, offering postnatal education resources. Additionally, she's also co-founded the Pelvic Health Practice, a team of specialist physiotherapists offering home visits across London. And I'm a really big fan. Welcome, Claire.
Hello, my love. That's a lovely intro. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on the pod and sharing your wisdom with us. We've had some great listener questions to answer in this episode, but let's get started with a bit more about you. So first of all, can you share with our listeners what initially sparked your interest in pelvic health physiotherapy and led you to specialise in this area?
Yeah, I love that. Essentially, it was my first ever job. I ended up in it slightly just, well, I guess by coincidence, or it was meant to be. So when I graduated many moons ago now, there weren't many physio jobs. And so it was sort of just take what you can get. And as a junior physio, you just take a job and then you go around lots of areas. And on my first day, they're like, we used to call it women's health back then. They were like, oh, your first job is in women's health. And I was like, oh no, because like I didn't learn anything about it at uni. Like it was an optional module and I did not opt in. I literally fell in love with it for my first few weeks. It was just such a fascinating area of the body. There's so much to learn. And also it's such a brilliant area of physiotherapy. You can make such a huge difference. And I've always loved having like nitty gritty conversations with people, almost like always loved having taboo conversations. And in essence, what I do every day is really break down the barriers to a lot of things that we find hard to talk about. And yeah, just kind of lay it all out and support people. And a light bulb moment for me, it was actually when I went to India and traveled for a bit, but I did a bit of volunteering and I worked with a few women. So it was sort of a charity that worked in the Delhi slums. And I did some education work with women there from a kind of physical physio perspective. And so there was a lot around pelvic health problems. And when I was there, I was like, yeah, this is what I really love. And this is what I feel I should do. I came back from that trip, applied for a job only in pelvic health. That was 12 years ago now. And here I am.
Oh, that's amazing. I honestly, I'm in awe of what you do. And I think it's such an important area. And obviously, in the world that I'm in, I speak to a lot of postnatal women, obviously, because they've got babies or children who aren't sleeping. Obviously, you cover all women and men. But it's an area that I think so many of us neglect. We're scared to talk about. We're embarrassed. And if people can just open up about it and it can become more normal to talk about these things, so many more people can access support. I mean, most people you meet are fairly uncomfortable talking about it. It's quite unusual actually to be like really open about your private areas. So how do you kind of approach breaking down those sort of barriers in your practice?
How I talk about it is what will basically bring the kind of, I'll set the tone. So I often might say, look, I'm really honest. I'm like, these are not easy things to talk about, but anything you say will not shock me. I've heard everything. This is what I talk about all day. So I'd rather you just be totally honest with me. Imagine I'm like the best mate at the end of a WhatsApp and let's just talk it out, you know? And actually often once I start saying things, they're then like, oh yeah. And they realize that I'm talking about it because I've heard it before. And then they feel understood, they feel seen, and it relaxes the whole thing. It's a very privileged position, I feel. What I've learned through life is that actually really deep down, we all want to be able to talk about these problems, you know, whether it's my friends, the mums at the nursery drop off, women in clinic, family, you know, everyone's sort of like, Claire, can I just have a quick chat? And then I'm like, sure, of course you can. My ears are always open. So Yeah, it takes a while sometimes, but I say most people are just so relieved when there's someone who's happy to talk about it. And I think the difference with physios is we have more time. So though you might see your GP or you might see a doctor, in essence, they always have to be incredibly efficient. And though we have to be efficient, we have so much longer with women. And I think that really allows that space of openness and being seen. And I think that has to be the first step in any road of recovery.
And of course, you will examine people as well, whereas GPs, I mean, they sometimes do, but like in your 6 week postnatal check, it's unusual for them to examine you.
Yeah. Is that right? Totally. Yeah. Well, it can be a lot of the time. And I'd say it's probably becoming more and more common. Though hopefully that will swing around one day. But yes, I'd say on average, most women are not being offered a physical check at their 6 week. Some GPs do as standard. They very much believe it's part of it and it should be. Even if they can't do an extensive check, which no one can do in 10 minutes, you know, with the best will in the world, no one can do an extensive postnatal check in 10 minutes. But really, in my opinion, what the check should be is to highlight whether there needs to be follow-up. Does that make sense? So
though
the check may not be able to say like, okay, you've got this problem, and we need to do all of this about it. It should be able to be like, right, we're identifying that there's a bit of a wound problem, or you're still struggling with your, you know, with sleep or your mental health or breastfeeding or whatever it is. And then now what we can do is maybe see you again to fully assess that one problem and then refer on as necessary. Whereas I think, unfortunately, it's just seen as like, this is the entire thing. And I think as women, we then think, well, I've been checked, this kind of idea of I've been checked, therefore I don't need to go back, or I don't need to go again. Whereas I always say to women, you know, it's 6 to 8 weeks postpartum. When someone says, how are you? All you're thinking is, I don't really know.
Like, yeah, you don't.
You don't, right? I remember being like, well, I mean, I guess I'm okay in the sense I've made it to this appointment, but I don't think I feel like me, but equally I've just had a baby and I've never done that before. So maybe this is okay for 6 weeks postpartum, but it's very, very hard to know. So I always say to him, look, maybe give yourself another 6 weeks. And if things are still persisting, go back and ask about that one specific thing, because then that can then lead on to what you need. So I think, the system doesn't quite, well, at all provide, I think, what women deeply need.
Yeah. And it's so hard to work out what to speak to your doctor about. I remember going in my system check with my first, and I was like, okay, well, I've got a tear that's still feeling a bit weird. I've got hip pain. I've got pelvic pain. I'm really tired. I've had mastitis last week and I've had antibiotics. So I've got an upset tummy and heartburn, and I'm absolutely
knackered. Where do I start? Which one do you want to pick?
it can be really hard for people. So I think raising awareness like you do, and like you have in your amazing book as well, which we must get onto, is so helpful for people. One of the things I really wanted to say in this podcast that I don't want to forget is, you know what absolutely drives me mad about pelvic health is jokes about incontinence.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about it.
When you see jokes about women wetting themselves and like, jumping on the trampoline or at soft play or like whatever it is. And I kind of understand where it's coming from, because people use the humour to try and, I guess, make themselves feel better. But people need to know that you don't have to live like that.
Yes. 100%. And I think you're right. We've got to a point, I think, where we've increased our conversation around it by laughing and making a joke of it, but then we don't have the next solution. But I think that's because generally as a country, we're not providing a solution. So then women are kind of left being like, well, either don't talk about it or I laugh about it. So I'll laugh about it, as that seems better than not. But then we never move on to the next bit. And that, to be honest with you, is just an absolute shortfall in our provision of support and education. You know, we're not educating women early enough. We're not educating women, full stop. I was teaching some antenatal education classes today. And, you know, these are like 35-year-old women plus looking at me thinking, they've never even heard about pelvic floor exercises.
Wow.
They've not even really understood that part of their body. And when I'm teaching them about it, they're like, wow, this is revolutionary. Now, the problem is, if we're letting women get to 35 plus, when actually we know skeletal muscles are starting to weaken, not strengthen, not that we can't make changes, but we've lost so many amazing years where we could have really got to know this group of muscles. We could have really done some great foundation work. And then we're putting them through the most taxing thing ever of pregnancy and birth. It's such a shame. So I think, though our healthcare system isn't helping, I also think the education system needs to be involved. And it's a much bigger and wider picture, in my opinion.
Amazing. I've had some really great listener questions. I had loads, actually, but I've picked a few to get us started and see how we get
on. Brilliant.
The first one is, I'm 9 months postpartum, still having pelvic pain. It started after birth. Any advice?
Great question. So this is, I think, really a good point in the sense that I think we associate pelvic pain as being a pregnancy thing, and then we just assume that's it. But, you know, pelvic pain can happen at any point in life, and sometimes birth itself can really aggravate pelvic pain or create it, which might be the case for this lady. In essence, we need to understand what's going on. So when we're talking about pelvic pain, we've got the bones, we've got the muscles, you know, we've got control around the pelvis, we've got the core muscles, we've got the pelvic floor. So there's a lot of things that can be contributing to pelvic pain. So ultimately, you need a personalized advice. But my advice would be, know that there is support. Try and see a, you know, a pelvic health physio or a chiro who's specialist in the pelvis, or maybe an osteo. You get some brilliant chiros and osteos who support women like this. And probably what is needed is we need to work on the muscles around the pelvis. So if there's any imbalances, so sometimes the pelvic floor can actually be quite tight, or the muscles inside, or the hip muscles that can be assessed inside are a bit tight. And then it's generally about muscle imbalance, really trying to build up that control and that stability around the pelvis can make a big start. What I'd probably say is if you can't access any of that support, starting with something like postnatal Pilates, maybe alongside some gentle yoga would be a great place to start, and just start seeing if some regular movement and strength work does start to make a difference, because for a lot of women it does. The problem is once you're in pain, you get a bit paralyzed to be like, where on earth do I go? But postnatal stuff should be very graded and gradual, and it might help you just to start feeling a bit more confident.
Yeah, that's great advice. Anyone who's listening to this and who's known me for a while or followed me on social media for a while will know that I've been through quite a long journey with my own pelvic pain. I have endometriosis as well, but I also have hypermobility and a scoliosis in my spine, and kind of finally got to the bottom of a lot of my pelvic pain is linked to these things. It's kind of a combination of all of the above. But what's really helped me is some hands-on chiropractic care and some osteo and some physio. It's like
a bit of everything.
But also for me, relaxing this part of my body is really key. Yeah. So if I get stressed or I'm in certain situations, the muscles can become tight and it can make things worse. Really focusing on trying to find time to relax. And that's where I think like yoga and stuff like that and like belly breathing and things have really helped me. But also the strength around the area to support my bendy body.
Good point. It's like, we always think about it as being a lack of strength, but I always talk about this. Any muscle group needs a variety of things. So they need to be strong, yes, but they need to have flexibility, and there needs to be coordination, and there needs to be endurance. Mm-hmm. And so it's making sure we never see something in one dimension, which is lovely what you basically expressed there, that you can see that there's other factors that play in. And then it's learning how to manage that, what works for you and your body, which is generally going to give the best, you know, route forwards.
Yeah. And kind of linked to this, I know lots of people struggle with going to the toilet and passing a stool or urine after birth. Somebody's asked, I get cramps and I need to poo to feel better. Should that person see a pelvic physio, or is there somebody else that could help? The baby's, her baby's 8 months, by the way, 8 months postpartum. Yeah.
So I would definitely say, you know, a specialist pelvic health physio who does a lot of digestive health work. So we don't all treat bowel conditions. It just really depends on your level of experience, but also just kind of what you're interested in. So I actually part-time work in a bowel team. So actually we deal with a lot of people in this position who have a lot of problems with their bowels. There could be various things going on here. You know, is it that you're not actually emptying fully when you do a poo? Some's getting a little bit stuck, which can happen if there's changes to the vaginal walls and the structures. That's then putting sort of pain and pressure, and that's creating these sort of cramps. So then when you poo, it feels a lot better. It could also be, and I don't know this woman's story, that if, say, you've had an internal tear when you've had your baby, that there is some sort of scar tissue that sort of pulls on the connective tissue. Because the anus is right next to the vagina, it's all part of the pelvic floor. Sometimes women will get this sort of referred sensation. In the same way, when you birth, you get a lot of pressure in your anus when you've had a vaginal tear or an episiotomy. Some women say to me, actually, my vagina feels fine. I'm feeling it all in my anus. We'd also need to think about hemorrhoids or any fissures. So there's lots of things that we'd need to think about. But yes, an experienced pelvic health physio would be a great place to start. If we feel there were things that we were like, hang on a second, we think you need X, Y, and Z, then we might send you on to a colorectal surgeon for some more examinations. But I'd say a physio is a great place to start.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, they can always signpost you to other people, can't they? It's kind of getting started on investigation.
Just getting on the journey.
Somebody has asked, what point should you ask your GP to refer you?
I love that. Yeah. I would generally say, I mean, at any point in life, if you have symptoms that are bothersome, they are affecting you, they're affecting your day-to-day life, and you get to a point where you're like, I don't want to live like this anymore, and I know that there is something I can do to change it, that is a great time. I think as a mum, you know, you get these statistics that's like, oh, it takes 7 years for women to seek support. And to be honest with you, initially I was like, wow, that is such a long time. How on earth does it take that long? Now, I'm 7 years into parenting now, and this year will be the first year I've got everybody in school and might actually get a bit more free time when everyone's at school. I'm not trying to just work every hour that I have childcare. So I almost think about September and think, actually, from then I might actually be able to attend appointments more regularly. So I think the main message is that sometimes those early years with little children are just all consuming, and all you can do is work and mum and work and mum, or just mum, and there's no buffer. That's okay. The main thing is that, you know, at any point you need to access support, your GP could refer. You don't have to be within that 6 to 8 week window postpartum. Yes, it might mean your referral route is slightly different, but there is always that support. So essentially, if it's impacting your life, your mental health, your quality of life, but if you just have symptoms, full stop, that warrants review. You absolutely deserve it. We shouldn't be normalizing any symptoms.
Yeah. Don't feel you have to live with things, even if sometimes I think we can like minimize them and think, oh, you know, it's normal. Like, let's say, for example, like piles or anal fissures.
Yes.
They can be quite common. They're really common after birth, right? But
yes,
it doesn't mean really you have to live with that. And actually, sometimes if we can get the courage up to go to the GP, it might be quite simple. It might be that they give you a stool softener and some kind of topical thing or suppository, I don't know. And that actually solves it for you. And you, if you'd gone sooner, it could have been quicker. And maybe they would need to refer you on. But I just think just making that first point of contact, speaking to your GP, you should just always do it if you can. I know it's hard to get appointments, but...
But even if you have to wait 3 weeks, you know what I mean? It, in essence, I would say just get something in, because most of these problems, they're not, as you say, they're not critical. And I think that's what we do as women sometimes. We're like, yeah, but someone else has got it worse. Someone else needs that appointment more than me. And yeah, maybe. But also, all symptoms are valid. You know, I think as women, we're so good to be like, well, as long as we're not like needing hospital or dying, we'll just crack on. We do. And things are only going to change if more of us step up and say, we have a problem. Because otherwise, things just stay unspoken. You know, we don't get as much research. We don't have as much funding. And it's not really seen as something that needs change. And I always say to women, even if you go to a GP who's then like, sorry, what's pelvic health physio? And you can then tell them, you know what, I heard a podcast or I read this.
Yes.
And actually, it might prompt that GP to look it up and find out their local services. And then you've changed that entire pathway for like the women that come behind you. And I really think that we are all the change. Like, I can talk about it publicly. I can write a book, but I'm not on the ground in every town and village. The women are, and we have to collectively be the change. I really, really believe that. We can wait for government and we can wait for the NHS, but I think we might be waiting a few more decades. So I think we can start pushing change. We can educate our kids. We can educate our friends. We can talk about it. And I'm seeing that so much. Like, I love it. I've actually started seeing like a mum in clinic and then her daughter also comes. Or I see a daughter and then she sends her mum. And then I see a friend and then her best mate comes. And then her entire NCT group comes. And that's how the change... It's amazing. I mean, obviously, I'm like delighted to see as many people in clinic. But I see the change. You know, I've been in this field for a long time now. And I've seen such a shift. But that's only going to continue changing. And I think... changing the next generation of doctors coming through, we can all be part of that. I think it's too easy to separate ourselves from that times, but we are part of that solution.
Oh, that's amazing. It's so inspiring hearing you talk like that. I got like goosebumps, like thinking about my own daughters, like, and just paving the way for them.
Now, I was thinking that about like my kids. Like, obviously, I talk about these things a lot, and even just talking about the narratives of school about doing a poo or not doing a poo at school. And, you know, I remember daughter coming home and being like, Mum, are we not allowed to poo at school? Like, my friend said, we shouldn't. And I was, I know. And I was like, isn't that interesting? This is where these chats come from, you know, because it's smelly and it's not nice for the other people. And I was like, no, absolutely. You need to be sure in yourself that if you need a poo, you go. If there's a toilet, you can go. And that's why they're there. That's why we have toilets at school. You know, next time they say that, you can say, well, actually, I've spoken to my mum and she says it's totally fine. Reception kids might hear you talking and suddenly feel more confident to do a poo at school because you've said it's okay. So I was like, again, there's all these tiny ways that I think we can change those conversations from a very tiny grassroots level, as simple as doing a poo at school.
Love that. Somebody asked if you recommend any gadgets for pelvic floor.
So, yes, I do at times. You know, I think there is, in my opinion, there is a place for everything that is evidence-based. So I say that because there are devices out there that you see promoted and they are nothing to do with the pelvic floor. And I think there is a huge market that I still feel prize on women's insecurities. And you probably see this within the sleep space. It's so easy for someone else to make a gadget. And because we're desperate, we put all our money into something. And I think what's really important is we make sure we understand why we're buying something and what it's going to support us with. So essentially, when it comes to gadgets, predominantly they come into two camps, a stimulatory machine or a biofeedback machine. So a stimulation device, it's a probe that goes in the vagina, it has these little electrodes, and it basically contracts your pelvic floor for you. If you think back when they used to advertise those kind of like abdominal workout bands that like basically stimulated your muscles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably still there, probably being added all over Facebook or something. I don't know. But essentially, it's a similar technology, but for your pelvic floor. And there is research that shows that if women have no connection with their pelvic floor, no activation, that is a great place. So I've definitely used them with the right people. A biofeedback device has been shown to, for some people who maybe struggle with motivation or what we would call compliance, actually following through with doing the exercises. Sometimes buying a device, you've invested in it, you put it in and it gives you that feedback. It makes you do it. And so for that reason, it can be helpful. There's no guarantees. If you buy a machine, it's not necessarily the solution to your problems. But I'd always say, look, if you're going to put in £100 or something into a device, see a physio first and see what you need. Ultimately, you may not need one because doing it yourself is enough. But if we think you do, then you can maybe save up and then get it if that feels like it is appropriate for you. So that's my advice on gadgets.
Totally agree. I tried one of them. It's quite a popular brand.
Yeah.
I tried it. And actually, I'm going to be really honest, it really upset me because I was like, I can't, like, it was almost like a game. I think it was an app and like you had to.
Yes.
I felt like I was losing the game.
Yes. It can be really demoralizing.
Yeah. And actually, I've been checked by you and I know my pelvic floor is okay.
Yes.
And I'm like, that money would have been better saved to see you or another professional, or just save my money and just done pelvic floor exercises myself.
Exactly. And that's what I always say to women, like, ultimately, there's nothing better than just working a muscle. I'm not going to buy a device to do my bicep muscle. I'm just going to load it with a weight and really work hard. And unfortunately, I think that's where it comes down to. Hard work and time and effort is really what makes the difference. And a device might be helpful, but it's too easy again for us to pry on women's insecurities and sell things as the full solution. There are these new chairs now that you can sit on and they stimulate your pelvic floor. So you're fully clothed and they're sort of a growing area. And I'm now getting loads of questions like, should I go and sit on these chairs? Like, now we've got evolving research that they could be really promising and again, a helpful adjunct. But my bugbear with anything like this is that we take it away from the simple education and information that all women deserve about their body. And yes, if they need an adjunct, great, we provide that. But it should never be sold as the solution, because it then takes away from our like empowerment, in my opinion, of like, I know my body, I can work my body. I mean, nothing feels better, does it, than being like, I've got this, I can do it myself. So I think that always has to be the first piece of the picture, and maybe the other bits add the colour, but really we should not be replacing anything with basic education and information.
Those kind of things can be really far out of reach for some people. It can feel quite excluding. And I imagine you could be sat there looking at Instagram and somebody, and I've seen this on Instagram, somebody talking about they go and sit on this chair And I actually looked it up out of interest to be nosy. It's really expensive.
It's really expensive,
That person might think, that's how I solve it. I can't do that. I can't afford that. So I'm going to do nothing.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really good point. I've not even seen it in that lens. And I think that's it for me. Privilege is a huge problem in our society, right? We have an amazing NHS service, but unfortunately, we don't have enough resources for everyone to have the support, in my opinion, that we deserve. And therefore, it does end up being basically a privilege thing. And I think what's so important is we again remind everyone that we don't need privilege to be educated and informed about our body. That's just not true. And that's why I think books and more publishing houses are saying, you know, we want to invest in self-help. We want to invest in health books because it is such a way of breaking down barriers. And that's why I'll say to women now, I'm like, you could literally get my book for 13 quid on Amazon. And I know because a woman has messaged me saying she used the book, it's guided her through, and she's now run like a trail run for her first time in her life without leaking. Oh. Now, isn't that phenomenal? She's never seen a physio. She has used the book as her support and she's paid £13. Brilliant. That's why I did it. I don't want everyone to feel they've got to spend hundreds of pounds. Maybe some people do need that. But I just think it is not a privilege to have health and and wellness and understand your body. I don't think, it shouldn't be a privilege. It often is, but it shouldn't. And I think that is such an important message. And why, you know, you do what you do. You put this amazing information out on socials. You put it on YouTube because we all care. And yes, obviously, we all need to make a living and we want to support people and more people need more support than others. But we've got to start at the grassroots level and work up, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. If somebody's listening to this and they don't know how often to do pelvic floor exercises or even how to do them, where's the best place? Your book explains all of that, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And what I've tried to do in the book is go way back beyond do some pelvic floor exercises. So get to know your anatomy, get to know the why, and then learn how to breathe properly, because that's a hugely important thing when it comes to our pelvic floor. And then walks you through connection and then building up to the different types of exercises, then in different positions. So I think what we do with pelvic floor exercises, we're just like, oh yeah, those squeeze Kegel things that you get told in pregnancy. We would never approach any other muscle group in the same way. Like if I was trying to, you know, get stronger, I'd never be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to do a couple of those squatty things and see what happens. You know, you work on a program, you follow a PT, you do like more and more of them, or you add some more weight. That's how muscles change. And the pelvic floor are a skeletal muscle, the same as your bicep, tricep, your hamstring, your quadriceps. They need progressive overload to get stronger. Often the problem is that not that Kegels or pelvic floor exercises don't work. We're just not educating women how to do them properly. So the book has got it all in it, probably the most detail I can get out there without seeing someone face to face.
Yeah, amazing. Such a good resource. Somebody has said, my baby's 16 months old and I can't use tampons since birth. Is this normal?
Bless her. Well, that's a great question. I say it's incredibly normal. Like so many women report this. And often it depends what she's feeling. But so for some women, if they've got, say, scar tissue and everything's got a bit tight and painful, it might be more painful to insert them. For other women, they might feel the vagina is just a lot more open and they just don't stay in properly. So depending on what the problem is, we might treat it slightly differently. If you're feeling like your vagina is just very open, they're slipping, building on that pelvic floor strength and tone can make a big difference there. If it's more like the discomfort route, gently massaging any scar tissue that's there. So using a technique that's very similar to perineal massage that we would do in pregnancy. Again, I've detailed all of this in the book for like postpartum as well. You can gently massage the scar. That helps to stretch any scar tissue that's there. And then often your muscles might relax a bit more and you'll be able to use a tampon. So I think it can sit in two camps, but absolutely, we can make a change, but it's just understanding your body and what you need to do.
I'm oversharing, but you know, it's the right
never
space.
Overshare.
Internal massage postnatally really helped me. So I had a lot of tightness around kind of my pelvic floor and around my coccyx, and a lot of it was linked to the pelvic pain I'd had. And actually doing a bit of massage every night, kind of after a bath, well, maybe not every night, but whenever I remembered, even 5 minutes really helped me. So don't underestimate that. And also getting to know your body again, because especially if you've had a vaginal delivery, it can feel really different.
So different. Yeah, it's so true. And I think that's another problem. We're like, well, is this just it now? Or are there things I need to do? And I think for some of us, we'll always be like, well, yeah, honestly, I can't even remember what I felt like 7 years ago, if I'm really honest. You know, like, life just moved on. I've gone through another, you know, and you've done it three times. So yeah, I think you're really, like, lots of bits in my body are different since having kids and the fact I'm getting older. So there's a lot that I just have to make peace with. But equally, I still feel like I've got a very healthy, functioning pelvic floor. I can use tampons. I can do all of those things. So, but it takes time and it takes work. And again, if that education piece isn't there, women don't know. Again, you're asking the question, is it normal? You'd like, is this just it? Is this normal after having kids? Maybe this is. So I'd say it's not normal. We should be able to use the products that we want to. I must say a lot of women, I think, move to like menstrual cups or menstrual discs or period pants after having kids, because they're just like, it's way more comfortable. I think we've seen a massive growth in that sort of plastic free period products and more like sustainability, which is absolutely phenomenal as well. And there's actually a menstrual disc that can work really well for women. So it's not like a moon cup that's more like kind of oval, it's flatter and it can sit really nice and high. Yeah, it's amazing. The brand that often does it is called Nixit, and I've had loads of women who've got sort of pelvic floor symptoms just found it absolutely amazing. So for anyone who is struggling, that could be a great option. And sometimes we do have to pivot, we have to accept our body is different, but not unless you've done a lot of work first and then we say, okay, enough, we've tried our best and we've not made any difference. But I think most of us, I love this. I had a 75-year-old in clinic. So I followed her up yesterday and I saw her first of the time in January, and she'd seen a few different physios across the years and sort of came reluctantly and was like, all right, let's try this again. And I'm really stubborn. So I was like, you're not leaving until we get this. We will. And she, for the first time, she understood how to do her pelvic floor through so many different visualizations and work that we did in education. She's come back. I mean, it's like 2 months later and her symptoms are significantly better. At 75, isn't it amazing? It's never too late.
Yeah, it just shows you, like, the human body, even when we age, amazing. I know things change, but we still have the capability to build strength in our muscles.
Totally. And I'd always love to encourage women to be preventive and do the work when they're younger. But equally, it is never too late. And I think that's the beauty. I often get people being like, is it too early for me to see you? Is it too late? I'm like, there is no too anything. It's just you come when's right for you. And yes, over the next generations, I'd love it if we see more women being more and more proactive. But I'm also delighted that we can always make change. And isn't that exciting? Yeah, the body is phenomenal. We just need to know what to do with it.
This episode is brought to you by Just Chill Baby Sleep, the number one infant sleep consultancy in the UK and beyond. We really love sleep and we want you to have all the information that you need about sleep at your fingertips. Our award-winning, self-led online courses can banish those bad nights and leave you feeling calm and in control, and most of all, well rested. For more information about our online courses and one-to-one support, please go to justchillbabysleep.co.uk. Listeners can also use the code JCPP for 10% off any online course or bundle. So sleep well. We had a few questions about pelvic girdle pain, and someone else referred to it as SPD, so symphysis pubis dysfunction or disorder. I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
and somebody saying it's still playing up 7 months postpartum. Somebody asking for advice on coccidia, stopping them from sleeping. That's when you have coccyx pain, like your tailbone. Oh, yeah. What can people do for this? And this is close to my heart as well.
Yeah. So great question. I mean, let's start off with what is it? So essentially, PGP is pelvic girdle pain. SPD was what we used to call basically pelvic girdle pain, but it just referred to pain at the front of the pelvis. Whereas now we've got this overarching term of PGP, pelvic girdle pain, because it refers to pain anywhere in the pelvis, because essentially it's one big ring. So we need anything that's happening at the front can affect the back, etc. So we really call it pelvic girdle pain now, but we all know what everyone means if they're using SPD as a term.
Yeah.
You know, it can be really complex, you know, and I know you've been on such a journey and you've learned so much about your body on that journey. And ultimately, there's often multiple factors. The research is really interesting and evolving, and we don't know enough, in my honest opinion. It used to be thought of as purely biomechanical, like it was just a problem with the bones and the muscles. But really now we understand, well, the body just doesn't work that simplistically. You know, we are one body. And as you've mentioned, stress impacts your muscle tone, and therefore you can sometimes become more symptomatic. Now, it's not saying you're making up. It's a very biological response, but it's a biological response to something else. So really how we are moving to in healthcare is using what we call like a biopsychosocial model, where we basically need to look at all areas of our life when we're understanding pain. And I think what's really, pain's a very complex thing to talk about. You have like more acute pain where you might have, you fall over or get an acute injury, like you twist your ankle, and you have an acute healing window, you do some rehab and the pain goes. Often for women that have pelvic girdle pain, is it's going on for, well, maybe a lot of the pregnancy or postpartum, and then, you know, years later. You know, that when pain's like that, it's a bit different. It's not that same acute twisted ankle. And so that's when we have to look at this whole picture. I think the problem is when we say that, though, is then people say, well, like, you know, are you trying to say it's in my head? And I'm like, fundamentally, no, that's not how pain works either. But there's always a communication with the brain in it. It's hard, isn't it? Because I think we think the brain of the mind, like the psychological part of the mind, but there's also brain, kind of the physical brain with the nervous system. And I think we're all learning more about our nervous system, right? I mean, how powerful sleep is for resetting our nervous system, and how if we're not sleeping, often people with pain will have more pain when their sleep is worse. Now, why is that? It's probably a nervous system thing. If you think about a lot of healthcare, the gut, the immune system, the nervous system, we are just on the tip of the iceberg of our understanding of these things. And so what I always encourage women who ever have pelvic pain is just be open to everything, like absolutely do the rehab, the work, the flexibility, the breath work, but also be open like you are to be like, I identify that stress plays a part. Therefore, I probably need to learn to manage stress as well. But that's not really, you can't always not be stressed, but it helps us on our journey, right? If we can be like, okay, I can identify I'm stressed. I've had to do the same thing with my own symptoms, you know, none of us are immune to this. But yeah, stress aggravates my symptoms. And therefore, I have to then be like, okay, I'm more aggravated because I'm a bit stressed. So I need to work on boundaries around work, getting a bit more sleep, doing things that I love and enjoy, you know? So I think these are just a helpful life principle. And obviously, if you've got pain, it's really important for that as well. But I think another thing I'd like to say, that challenge a narrative of, and there's still a huge narrative around pelvic pain that, well, if you've got it once, that's just kind of it. Whereas what I'm seeing more and more in the work that I'm doing is I think we can be more preventative, again, because our healthcare system is, I'll refer you once you're in pain. Now what I'm seeing is women maybe have had a lot of pain in a first pregnancy, they come before a second pregnancy and say, what do I need to do? They do like what we'd call prehab, so rehab before, and then it helps them through the subsequent. Because once we are pregnant and we've got changes in our posture and our movement and things like that and our muscles, it can feel harder. And I had a lady who once was on crutches in her first, like absolutely, and then she did loads of work between and then through, and she never had any pelvic pain second time. Now, that's not everyone's story, I'm completely aware, but I know it is possible. The main message is it's complex, there's a lot to it, but there absolutely is support. But it's, again, always trying to understand your body and your situation.
Definitely my pelvic pain during pregnancy was the worst in my first pregnancy. And this was over 11 years ago now that my pain started. And I was told it's just normal pregnancy aches and pains. It'll go away. Stop going to the gym. Because I used to like lift weights 5 times a week. And I went from doing that to nothing at all. And it was horrendous. Wow. Whereas after that, when I was working out, God, how am I going to solve this? And it took a long time and I'm still working on it. But I did pregnancy Pilates for my subsequent pregnancies. I did some strength training and it was never as bad as it was that first time.
Isn't that amazing? Exactly. And we don't always mean that we won't have anything, but we can totally manage it better with that education, that understanding. And I know, because we've talked about this, you're learning more and more about your body all the time. And again, it's like, just because the problem might be started 11 years ago doesn't mean that we can't continue to make progress. And I think, again, we can all just be putting this like, oh, that's sort of chronic and that's persistent. But, oh, there's so much we can do. And it really breaks my heart, I think, that so many women are out there just being, I mean, I have just story after story, week after week, where it's just sort of told and normalized. And I think what we don't do well in our healthcare system is joining the dots for women. I mean, this week I've seen this multiple times. They might have seen three different doctors for different specialities, and no one's just sat down with them to be like, well, actually, your bowel problem is also contributing to your sexual problem, and it's also related to your bladder problem. In our healthcare system, we have to be specialists. And so you get a bowel specialist and a bladder specialist and a gynecologist. Whereas I think as physios, we get this privilege in pelvic health of being like the overarching view. Yeah, we don't know as much of any of those doctors, and you wouldn't want us to do surgery on you. But we have the ability and the understanding to very much bring a bird's eye view and teach you how these things connect. Now, that light bulb moment for women, it's like life changing. They're suddenly like, oh, wow, okay, I get it. If I sort my bowels out, I can help my pelvic floor. And then if I help my pelvic floor, my sex life will get better. And then probably with all of that, this will happen. It's really empowering when we make those links. But I think generally, we don't do it that well.
It can be hard when you're the person in the moment, like kind of knowing how to connect them, unless you've got someone guiding you.
It's impossible for women to do that. But that's what I mean, that the healthcare system doesn't do it. And it takes that almost external eyes to come in and talk you through it. But again, that's where I have the privilege of time with people. Most medical professionals don't get that. And I think that's where, if we can't have that with someone one-to-one, how can we find that education online? Or, you know, you have so many amazing celebs now, like Davina doing constant lives with different specialities around menopause. And I think so many women are learning about stuff that they never would have done before her page started talking about it. So I think we're seeing such an amazing shift in women's health, and we've just got to keep going because it will make the difference.
Yeah, I've been learning about sleep and menopause recently. That changes as well. It changes with sleep hormones. It's absolutely fascinating that how we can support women in perimenopause and menopause with their sleep, and not having to just deal with not sleeping at night and then having to look after your family and other dependents. That's another episode.
And I love that. Well, I'll be listening.
I wanted to ask you a bit about straightforward kind of advice. And by straightforward, I mean non-complex cases where people maybe don't have anything bothering them. They've had a fairly straightforward vaginal birth or cesarean section. How soon can they start exercising pelvic floors and all that kind of jazz?
Really, after birth, you can start once you've done your first wee, is basically what we say. We just need to make sure your bladder's all happy after birth, and then you can start. Now, yes, especially after vaginal delivery, I don't know if you remember this, but everything feels different. I remember just being like doing the squeeze test to be like, is there anything down there? And I was like, okay, we're still there, but it definitely feels a bit weak. And we know that, like, the amazing statistics are like the pelvic floor part of it stretches like 2.5 times its original length during vaginal delivery. Like, amazing stuff. But ultimately, that is a big stretch, and that's going to take time. But the reconnection, I'd always say that initial phase is just about you really feeling connected to your pelvic floor again. Now, that's hard to do if we haven't done much work before, because it's really important we do the work before, you know, whether that's before pregnancy or during pregnancy, to get to know the muscles better. And then we can start reintroducing it postpartum. But you can do it from early days. I say in the early weeks, when you're feeding your little one, it's generally the best time to do it. I used to do it during all the night feeds because I was like, well, I'm sat here, I'm trying to stay awake, I'm probably watching maths, and I just probably should do some pelvic floor while I'm watching some trash and this baby is on my boob. You know, and that was a great time for me to do it. It depends how you feed your little one, whether you've got support or you're sharing it with your partner. But I do think associating it with something to do with the baby is the most realistic way that it will actually happen.
Yeah, that's really good advice. What advice would you give to women who might be experiencing pelvic health issues but are hesitant to seek help?
Yeah. Oh, I'd just say you are not alone. So I think knowing that you're not alone and that we get it is a first step, because there is absolutely no shame in finding it hard or finding it hard to talk about. What I'm seeing with women is sometimes a virtual consultation can be a really nice first step. Recently, I've had a few women with problems with intercourse, and they've sort of emailed. I think they've probably just been like, I'm just going to send the email and press send, and I've just done it. I'd just like to speak to you virtually. And a few of those people are like, I've literally never spoken to anyone about this ever. but I just know if I can say it to you, then we'll be able to move forwards. Brilliant. Like, here's the floor. Tell me what's going on. Now, when there's that virtual consultation, there's an element of separation. I don't know. It can make you feel comfortable. You're in your own home. You've probably got maybe family around or someone that you can talk to straight after the appointment. You haven't got that anxiety of, I've got to get to the clinic. I've got to talk to people at the clinic. I've got people that might know why I'm in this department or what's going on. Or what if I bump into someone I know and I've got to explain? It removes all of that. And sometimes that is the first step that you need. In the same way, you can maybe opt for a GP telephone consultation. You know, a lot of the time now on the forms that you do for the GP, you can say, would you like to do this online? You know, would you like to speak on the phone? And sometimes that's a great option. So I think my question for these women would be like, well, what's your biggest fear? Is it, you know, how you think the medical professional is going to react? Is it your fear of bumping into someone that you're going to have to talk about? Is it the stress of having to get somewhere? What is it? And then work out what the fears are and then try and think, oh, how can we break down the barriers to that? Or maybe it's you just want to get a book first and read about it and then get the confidence to be like, well, if she's talking about it, loads of people must experience this.
Yeah.
And then you build the confidence up. So I would say just break it down. It doesn't have to look conventional. Honestly, the women that then do it, they're like, oh, I'm so glad I did this. I'm so glad I did this. We make a plan for you and you can implement it. And that is just so empowering. I always say to women, come in your own time or just drop us an email. Drop me an email and just be like, I'm really anxious because I'm going to say, I totally get it. What would be best for you? We're very chatty. We love to chat to you. And we also have probably sat in a similar position. We've probably been through something similar. And there's a lot of empathy and understanding there.
Claire, I want to thank you so much for joining me. I've really enjoyed recording this. If anyone would like to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, so on Instagram, I'm just my full name, Claire Bourne, and then physio at the end. Got my website, so that's claire-bourne.com. And if you just want to understand more about what pelvic health physio even is and what we provide, I've also got YouTube where I put a lot of videos now on to just try and again allow you things to watch. Or yeah, there's my book. It's called Strong Foundations, Why Pelvic Health Matters. It goes from childhood through to menopause. And I think it can just help anyone at any point in life. So hopefully something is there that will make it accessible and supportive for you.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I've loved this.
Guys, please remember to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. I hope you've really enjoyed the episode. It means the absolute world to have you listening. I'll be back soon with more parenting problems, rants and sleep information soon. Sleep well.